For everything geek pop culture, this is Comics Online, baby.
This is called Pirate Radio.
You refer to the prophecy of the one who will bring balance to the Force. You believe it's this boy?
He can see things before they happen.
He can help you.
The Force is unusually strong with him.
Anakin, don't do anything without first consulting either myself or the Council.
You don't need guidance, Anakin. I see you becoming the greatest of all Jedi.
The boy has exceptional skills.
His abilities have made him arrogant.
You're not all powerful.
Well, I should be. I will be the most powerful Jedi ever.
Sense great fear in you, Skywalker. You have hate. You have anger, but you don't use them.
Only through me can you achieve a power greater than any Jedi.
Anakin has turned to the dark side.
If you're not with me, then you're my enemy.
I will do what I must.
You will try.
You are the chosen one!
And now, Comics Online Pirate Radio presents How to Fix the Star Wars Prequels.
Welcome to Comics Online Pirate Radio. My name is Mike Lunsford. I am your host this evening, and this is a very special episode. It's actually the best of GGR. What is GGR, you might be asking? That was my website that I created a few years ago. That's the Great Geek Refuge is what that stood for. We actually had a podcast as well, and it was called Pirate Radio, which is why Comics Online now has Pirate Radio. What we did was our first couple of episodes that we did on Pirate Radio were about how to fix the Star Wars prequels. Well, I wanted to share them with you guys as well, since a lot of you are newer listeners. So go ahead and listen. This is myself. This is Steve Monick. This is Vic Azeem. We're talking about how to fix those Star Wars prequels.
We are going to start this first podcast. We are going to talk about Star Wars, which is... It's one of those things where it's nerdy, but it's also become chic that everyone can talk about it. It's starting to... The curtain is starting to be pulled back. Everyone can talk about Star Wars, but then the things that we're going to say right now, any of you casual Star Wars fans are going to be like, yeah, I gotta go. We're going to talk about the prequels. The prequels, because they sucked. They were awful. They frustrated us to no end. Especially those, like, passionate, rabid Star Wars fans who... used to pretend they were Luke Skywalker in their backyard and jump off their deck like it was the skiff from Return of the Jedi. I mean, that's...
Your brother with a Hot Wheels track pretending it was a lightsaber. Yeah. Exactly, we were all there.
Lightsaber battles in your backyard. I think everybody went to that stage, so...
Exactly, yeah. And when it snowed, when we had a snow day, guys, if you weren't pretending like you were on the planet Hoth, like there was something wrong with you, you were dead inside.
It was who hasn't tried a Yoda impersonation in front of the mirrors at some point, you know? Everybody's apparently can do the Yoda voice.
I think there was just you, man.
Maybe. Well, I was still practicing being Alex Trebek in front of the mirror, so that's probably...
Well, there you go.
I might actually be a nerd, so...
What is my favorite game show? No.
I've already...
In the form of question.
Hey, wow, bravo, well done.
No stuff.
So, what we're going to be talking about today specifically is Episode 3 of the prequel. That's Revenge of the Sith, or as what Steve has affectionately referred to, what we're going to be doing here, and that is rewrite of the Sith. I've already written two articles... on the GGR webpage about episode 1 and episode 2 and how they can be fixed. And quick hitters on this one, just so you guys can get caught up. You should read the articles, though, because
they're pretty good.
They're works of art. They really, truly are.
Mike likes his writing. This is a fact that you should know about him.
there's Hemingway and then there's Mike. And I might take Mike, actually, in this case.
It's like 1A, 1B, really.
Yeah, I mean... You know.
Mike's pulling ahead. Hemingway's dead, so there's no door.
I got that going.
There's no door coming
out. That's the only thing I got up on Hemingway.
This is the fourth quarter. You have plenty of catch-up time.
You're going down, Hemingway. I'm coming after you, Papa. It's me and you, big man. quick hitters on the first on episode one. It was so confusing. There was so much stuff going on that didn't make any sense, so we're making the story simpler. One thing we can all agree is that Phantom Menace is way too convoluted. If it takes more than a sentence... to describe the movie's basic plot, there's a huge issue. And when part of your main plot is focusing on trade tariffs and a robot army fighting fish people, no, that's not going
to
work.
Are you implying a scene that had nothing to do with the story, but talking about how the Congress of the Universe worked was not a good point? Is that what you're trying to say here?
Look, I don't want this to be Star Wars, how a bill becomes a law.
I'm just a bill. Yes, I'm only a bill. And I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill.
That just doesn't make sense.
Schoolhouse Rock.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you very much. Solid. Yes, exactly.
George Lucas's political statement about the world.
Pretty much. And when you're in 1999 and you're a kid, you're not caring about that. You're caring about sword fights and saving princesses.
Exactly. You know? And we didn't get that until halfway, and we only sort of kind of got that. But either way, we're simplifying this story. What I ended up doing was I made this more about the Jedi trying to stop a war, because they realize that they're really the only ones that are going to be fighting this war if it happens for the Senate. Because the Senate, again, caught up in bureaucracy, will mention that. We're not spending 15 minutes on it like this movie did. But not only that, Anakin Skywalker has to be older. He cannot be 9 years old. I get it. I see why they did it. Because you want to see how far he goes from being a sweet, innocent, adorable child who says things like wizard to becoming the most evil man on the face of the planet who chokes people out. I get that. I get it, but you don't need to do it.
In Jingle All the Way, fun movie, annoying movie with Arnold Schwarzenegger, what have you. But I didn't need to see Jake Lloyd in a space opera. It didn't need to be done.
Yeah, yeah. Not only that.
Jake Lloyd is bad for all movies, let's be honest.
Have you, quick aside here, have you guys seen what he's like as an adult now?
No.
Okay, so, when I go to a lot of comic conventions because I also write a comic book. My best friend, Ben Shaw, is an artist. I do all the comic book storyboarding and all the writing and all the story work for, it's called Ethan Stone PI. Quick plug, we'll just leave it at that. But we go to these cons all the time, and Jake Lloyd was actually there, and I didn't realize it became a big deal, but it's the second time that he's been at a con. Somebody asked him about Anakin Skywalker, and he flipped out. The dude is like, because he's so angry that his childhood is ruined by this thing, he's jacked. I mean, like, just popping roids, just, like, lifting as much as he can, like, you know, do you even bench bro kind of guy? And, like, just flipped out. And there's a YouTube video on there. Check it out. There's a YouTube video if you look it up, and he just goes off on this dude. And you're just like,
that's what he's identified with. What is he famous for if not for Anakin Skywalker?
Well, again, you know,
and the flop that it was. Yeah. I mean, that sucks.
Yeah, yeah. But he just,
so he's going to be Arnold in the reboot of Jingle All the Way. He's going to play the dad character of the giant muscle. I'm just kidding with all this, by the way. Okay,
well, I mean, that's
I was taking notes. I was like, this is on my must-see list of 2015.
Breaking news to all our listeners. Jingle All the Way 2.
Was Sinbad going to be in it? That's
but Jake Lloyd, if there's the odd chance that you're listening to this, buddy, I feel your pain, man. I'm sorry. I really am. You tried. You really did. But what are you going to do, man? Just calm down. Just calm down.
He's got carrot top syndrome, basically.
Does, dude. Oh, man.
Yeah, they're assigned autographs. Don't,
But one of the things that, like, absolutely drove me nuts about this is they made it so that, remember, like, Jedi were these cool things? There was only, like, two of them. There was Yoda and there was Luke, and they were just cool. And, like, Luke, in order to become a Jedi, had to have this 80s montage of how he trained to become a Jedi. Well, they just obliterated all of that because they were like, hey, if you don't have this magic STD, then you don't actually get to be a Jedi. So, like, it's this whole, like, hierarchy of bullcrap. And, like, what about natural ability? Where does that come from? Like, where does any of that come from? You don't have to work hard for anything anymore? Oh, it just irritated me so much. Anyways.
I want to contribute, but now that you said magical STD, I'm just imagining, like, you are with every Jedi that he's ever been with, PSAs, or make sure you protect your lightsaber. You're just, like, ridiculous PSAs about not getting midichlorians
protect your
in
lightsaber.
Your system.
I like that.
Yeah.
You gotta wrap it up, B.
That works in a couple different ways.
Size matters not. Look at me. Judge me by my size, do you?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
kudos to the casting of Samuel L. Jackson, though.
Yeah.
He's in every movie ever, actually. Actually, I hate Samuel L. Jackson, let me be honest. I hate his guts, because he's in every movie ever, so. You guys, how'd you guys feel about Samuel L. Jackson being in that movie, though?
Kind of to Mike's
point. Was that inspired
point,
casting? I mean,
well, I mean, kind of to Mike's point, and I'm not sure if it was for demographics or if they just wanted Sam Jackson because he's BA in a lot of the roles he plays, but, like, I feel like what Mike was saying is that so much story was dedicated to, I don't want to say nonsense, but stuff that we didn't need to see,
yeah,
that the characterization didn't get flushed out well.
Yep.
And they're like, well, Sam Jackson has to be doing stuff. Well, he has the purple lightsaber, and that was the end of his characterization.
Yeah,
they didn't
much.
Give him a lot of backstory or screen time or anything legitimate. So if you do away with the nonsense that he's talking about, then you get to be using Sam Jackson in a realistic way.
And perfect example is you didn't need to waste time on explaining why Jedis were Jedis. They're just the Jedis. There's the Force, and everybody could potentially become a Jedi if you work hard enough and you...
Yeah, there's a whole 10-minute scene where they're testing his blood, and oh my god, his levels are higher than Yoda's. Who cares? I want to see Sam Jackson wasting a mofo, if you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, so. And that was the other problem with casting Samuel L. Jackson, is you were using his reputation. You were using his reputation to build off of. Like, hey, that's Sam Jackson. He's awesome. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't really do anything in this movie, except until the third one, and gets his hand chopped off. Well, that was kind of a waste. Like... a wasted character. And yeah. All right.
Great point.
So back to all of this stuff real quick. In episode one, Darth Maul doesn't die. Oh my gosh, right? Spoiler alert. He doesn't die because you need a main character to further into the trilogy that is going to be this thing that we're going to try to save now. Queen Amidala. So it always bothered me that Anakin Skywalker and her fell in love because there was really no reason for it. Well, you need to focus more on that. She became queen at 14. Mm-hmm. That's kind of weird. Think of how that parallels our universe. Think of Amanda Bynes. Think of Macaulay Culkin and
Lindsay Lohan.
Lindsay Lohan, where these child actors just end up getting so screwed up because they get put into these positions of power where they're making money, they're making decisions that adults should be making, and they don't really know how to live their life. That she's a perfect example.
And I think the other side of that is the attention.
Yeah.
She is on screens in front of an entire planet as a queen at that age. That's not what you want in addition to puberty.
Exactly.
Going through that process in conjunction, bad combination.
But let's tie that in real quick. Why does she fall in love with Anakin Skywalker? Because of that big, grandiose thing that she loves. She loves the attention. She has this dude that shows up, right, and says to her, I've been dreaming about you every night since I met you. That is frightening! That is horribly frightening.
She should have filed a restraining order immediately after episode one.
Yeah, I've watched enough Criminal Minds to know what the second half of that story is.
No, but she ate it up. She loved every minute of that. She was like, aw, isn't that sweet? Because she's crazy, and he's crazy. And
let's prance in a field together.
Let's do all sorts of adorable things. You can slice a pear with the Force.
I think George Lucas should stay away from... romantic love scenes. As a writer, he just doesn't really how to create a chemistry between two characters.
He does not.
The dialogue with everything there. So.
Well, and the chemistry that worked in the original was the anti-chemistry. I love you. I know. Like, doing the big romantic gestures and all this nonsense is like...
jerk. That was the
whatever.
That was the best jerk line ever. But this also ends up working really, really well with Anakin. Because we saw in the second episode that... he's this dude. He's kind of a jerk, and he's hot-headed and temperamental. But one of the things that we're missing here is why he's like that. And I think that we need to establish that he's forced into this training environment with all of these other Jedi. But mind you, he's now going to be older. He's going to be like 15, 16 years old. They've already established the Jedi start training at a really, really young age.
Yes.
So you've got this older kid. Like, think about it. If you guys knew anybody in high school... when you were like 16, 17 years old, there was that one kid that was like 19 or 20, had like a full beard, had kids, well, like still hadn't graduated
yet. You
mean,
you're talking about Judd Nelson from Breakfast Club.
Exactly, exactly.
He's the archetype, the prototype for that. Yeah, tell me he was not. You can't tell me he was not.
He's Skywalker played by Judd Nelson.
There's your rewrite right there. There's your recasting right there.
You know, well, folks, that's the Christmas. End of the podcast here. Judd Nelson, Jedi Apprentice. I think we have a couple
films.
What
about you, Dad?
We have a couple films to make here.
What did you get me for Christmas, Dad?
You mess with the bull, you get the Force.
But either way, like I've always pictured Anakin Skywalker better played as like that outcast kid. Like everybody kind of picks on him and beats him up, and like he just doesn't get it. He sees Padme, he thinks she's pretty, he says stupid things that nobody else would ever say, and she loves it, so now they're on this course for disaster.
They're not Romeo and Juliet, they're Sid and Nancy. Basically.
Exactly. Sid and, wow, nice.
Yes. And
bam!
Ike and Tina also.
Yeah. And it gets to that point in 3. I think that's where it's heading towards.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Dare I
absolutely.
Say Ray Rice and... too soon.
Yeah, too soon. Yeah, but like, and throughout all of this, Chancellor Palpatine's like, hey kid, don't worry about it. You know what? The Jedi say it's not cool for you to do this, but you know what? You've had a rough go of it. And he keeps, like, patting the kid on the back.
Here's a couple bucks. Take her on a nice date.
Exactly, you know? Yeah. And he's, like, giving her all of these things. He's saying subtle little things like, hey, did you know that that your strength comes from your passion? If any of you Star Wars nerds know anything about the Sith Code, which I do, and I'm ashamed to admit it, that's one of the main tenets of the Sith Code, is that passion brings strength. And
check my Sithopedia page real quick.
The Sithopedia page. He starts feeding him this stuff. This is how Episode 3 should be fixed. The Clone Wars have begun to wind down. The fighting is still intense as the Separatists are becoming desperate. What ended up happening was, instead of it being this thing where Jango Fett was the clone template for everything, that's stupid. Let's not do that. Let's have it just a bunch of clones, a bunch of random clones. They show up. The Emperor is like, doesn't even ask for permission. He's like, I'm doing this. We need this. He makes a decision because that's what leaders do when there's a war going around. Not only that, the Jedi are kind of happy about this because now they're not the main focus of the war. Before this, they were essentially leading planetary militias of like random farmers and people who don't know how to fight. So this ends up being a good thing. The Separatists make this last-ditch effort. They assault Coruscant, just like you guys saw in the original Episode 3. There's really nothing that changes up to this point.
That was the best scene of the movie.
Yeah, when he chops off Saruman's head. That was fantastic. That looks good. Like, when he just stands there and he looks at him and he's just like, yeah, no, I'm chopping off your head. And he's, yeah, that was
fantastic. Was actually an honor killing, so.
Yeah, it truly was. Yeah, so we keep moving forward here with this. We get to a point where Anakin is—he's a hero. Everybody loves him. Everybody thinks he's great. But the Council is dressing him down. They're like, you know what? You're too hot-headed. You're not doing this. But not only that, we also start learning some things about Anakin during the Clone Wars that he was brutal to people. He was not taking prisoners. He was killing everybody. He went a little too far. And Mace like, Windu.
What he did with Dooku—that's standard operating procedure for him in the war.
Exactly. Exactly. And Mace Windu, who's actually now become the head of the Jedi Council. Because at the end of Episode 2, Yoda says to all of them, look guys, war is not cool. It's definitely not cool. I've said that we shouldn't be doing this in the first place. I'm putting myself in exile. Yoda becomes essentially like a Dalai Lama of sort, where this is not the right answer. War is not the right answer. So he leaves. Mace Windu's in charge. It becomes a much more militaristic Jedi Council than we've ever seen before.
And I could see Sam Jackson doing that, to your point from before, Vic.
Actually using Sam Jackson the way he should be used.
A prominent role that makes sense.
So like when Anakin walks in to him one day and asks him a question, he's like, what does Marcellus Wallace look like? Or what does the Emperor look like? And he's like, what? And he goes, what are you planet I ever heard of? They speak English on Kashyyyk? I mean, like, we can have moments like that. It would actually be cool.
Sorry.
Say what again?
Pulp Fiction, by far my favorite movie.
It's such a great movie, absolutely. But yeah, he's the head of the council. He's telling Obi-Wan, look, your Padawan is in big trouble. I'm not cool for this. He actually suspends Anakin. Anakin's like, this is bullcrap. I can't believe you're suspending me. I'm the one that won this war. You wouldn't be here without me. And Obi-Wan's kind of like, yeah, they really wouldn't be here without him. So Anakin goes to his buddy. He goes to his buddy, the Emperor, and he's like, hey, look, I got suspended. This is making me feel like I was when I was a kid, when I was being trained. I feel like an outcast, and the Jedi are just using me. The Emperor's like, yeah, you know what? This is exactly what it is. He says, the Jedi are blind. If they really don't see how great you are, he says that they're punishing you because you got results and they weren't able to do that. Anakin agrees. Palpatine offers him a deal. He says, hey, you become my right-hand man. Leave the Jedi. Just leave him straight up. Think about it. No big deal. I'm not going to push you. But remember, your strength is in your passion. And Anakin's like, wait a minute. I think I've heard that. That's the Sith, isn't it? And he's like, look, the Sith aren't evil. It's all propaganda from the Jedi, man. They're telling you this stuff because they want you to be passive and docile. They want you to be their
controlled.
Exactly. Basically. And Anakin freaks out because he used to be a slave. So that freaks him out. I'm not going to be somebody's slave again.
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah. And that's what they want from him, and he's not going to do it. So he leaves. He sees the Chancellor's point. He goes and he talks to Padme, who they've had a whirlwind relationship. Here's the big twist. She's already had the kids.
So they're a little bit older than infants, basically.
Exactly. But Anakin has no idea, because he's been fighting the effing war.
Which, yeah, I mean, why would he be around?
Exactly. So he has no idea that she's had these kids. He didn't really know that she was pregnant, because at one point we'll establish that there was a message sent, it never actually got to her, got to him, because the guy who was carrying it got evaporated by
something.
Blaster of some sort, or something awful that happened to him. Palpatine comes on the TV, on the space TV, the whatever you want to call it, yeah. The interwebs. What do they call it in Star Wars universe?
Intergalactic C-SPAN, basically.
Okay. There you go. Do we have Larry King on this?
I would imagine so. He's probably still around at this point.
Is he an actual frog?
Well, this was from a galaxy far away a long time ago.
Oh, yeah. So he's
definitely probably when he was in his, 30s, right?
Yeah, exactly. That was his first assignment.
Yeah.
Galactic Civil War here, Larry King.
Live from the boo.
Live from the boo. But Palpatine gets on there as Anakin and Padme are talking about things. She's like, look, I got some awesome news for you. We need to go home to Naboo. I need to show you what's going on. And he's like, I will. We got some things that we got to get straightened out here first. All of a sudden, they're like, oh, crap, breaking news. Palpatine announces the war's near an end. The clone troopers are resounding a success. The planets and systems that seceded from the Republic are working on independent attempts to rejoin and be part of the Senate. So, hey, everything's great, right?
Honky-dory.
Exactly. But he stops, and he mentions that it is with a heavy heart that after a thorough investigation of the actions of the Jedi Council, he will be asking for their expulsion from the Coruscant and removal from the Galactic Senate. He states that they abused their position as defenders of the galaxy and pushed children into war. They caused countless children and teenagers to be killed, maimed, disfigured, or scarred mentally because they were rushed into battle. He has spoken to several Jedi trainees who will remain nameless, who stated they were used, their powers were used, and that their own safety and well-being was ignored. Their sacrifices were a means for promoting the battle and not actually doing something, and that the Galactic Senate cannot stand for that. So all of a sudden, we're starting to see that Palpatine had a big plan for all of this in the first place.
Plus, I think it just cinematically.
Yeah.
And Vic, I think you can speak to this because you know story structure and stuff like that, but that leaves you the ability to show Anakin, these kids, just some brutal, awesome action scenes. But then there's a payoff for it. It's not just mindless action, which we saw in the movies where people are swinging around.
There's a lot of mindless action there, and you have to have purpose to the action. Otherwise, the audience gets lost and doesn't care about it. So.
And then you see that this guy's evil, obviously, but is he really evil? Because look at what the Jedi were doing. It's not this, clear-cut, little kid version of Star Wars, because that's what I felt like they made the prequels. Hey, we need to make this something that kids can go out and buy toys for, and you need to support the good guys, not the bad guys. The original Star Wars movies were not meant to be for kids. They were meant to be just good movies. And that got lost in this. And I think that if you put this part in here where he's saying, look, the Jedi kind of did some messed up stuff. Yeah, it's coming from the bad guy, but at the same time, too, it's not just black and white. There's a lot of gray area here with this. We're going to jump forward with this because we're running short on time here. We'll close this up real quick. Obi-Wan has some choices, too. Obi-Wan is the one that goes to fight Darth Maul, because now Darth Maul takes the place of General Grievous, because we don't waste that stupid character.
We only need two lightsabers, guys. It's fine. But that's his storyline through all three movies, right? He's been chasing and working and fighting Darth Maul the whole time. That's his side storyline.
Exactly. Darth Maul is the one who killed
Qui-Gon.
Qui-Gon in the beginning, in the first one. So Obi-Wan's been after him. But Obi-Wan's had this conscience of faith, because he's not supposed to want revenge. He's not supposed to want these things, but this is what he wants. He finally gets there. He fights Maul, and Maul is really kind of not into it. The fight is just kind of passive, and Maul says to him at one point, look, man, I know what you're going through. He's like, you seem weary of all this too. And they exchange a really, really heated dialogue where Maul says, maybe we're not the same. And Obi-Wan gets really mad. He's like, we're not the same. And Maul says, he goes, no, man, we're just errand boys. We're doing the bidding for somebody else. He's like, we're two sides of the same coin. He goes, you know, the Republic did tons of awful stuff. You guys murdered innocent people because of miscalculations I just completely lost it, and it's gone. There it goes.
So, they're talking about, he's saying, there are plenty of atrocities that you supposed good guys did, just as much as us.
You guys got bad intel. That's the word I was looking for. Okay. You guys got bad intel, you killed innocent people, and then what? That makes you any better than me? We're the same person. He's like, you believed in your side, I believed in mine. We're really not that different. It makes Obi-Wan mad, and he murders Maul, just stabs him right through the chest. And he goes, no, there's a difference. He goes, this is personal. He goes, because you had no problem murdering my master and my best friend, and that if we are pawns, that's fine, but you're paying for his death. And Maul kind of smiles and understands it. And you have this really, instead of just hey, let's just chop off as many limbs as we can and then shoot him in the heart with a gun and then be like, oh, these are stupid guns.
Guns are for jerks. I'm British.
I'm going to make it hard that everyone will laugh at. We don't need that, man. this would be better. This would be so much better because you're just like, well, damn, I kind of feel bad for Darth Maul now.
Yeah.
He gets stabbed in the chest, but you know what? They got a big point.
And it's a parallel to what you're talking about with... Yeah. In war, it's hard to draw that line between good and bad. It's not as clear-cut as the movies tried to paint that picture.
Yeah, and I think that Obi-Wan finishes him off. He does very... Like, in Return of the Jedi, where he gives... where Luke gives Vader that Viking funeral and lights him on fire. We do something similar to that, to show that he at least respects Darth Maul in the end. And then he leaves, and he's actually ready to transmit his resignation from the Jedi Order. And this is when all hell breaks loose, because Palpatine has announced that the Jedi Order is being disbanded, and they're being kicked off of Coruscant.
And now, part two of Comics Online Pirate Radio's Rewrite of the Sith.
We are going to finish up our rewriting Star Wars, the Star Wars prequels to be specifically. When we last left our heroes, Anakin had just found out that Palpatine was kicking the Jedi Council out of Coruscant. And the reasoning for this is the Jedi Council was not the altruistic good guys as they were in the original trilogies, or the original prequels as they were seen on the big screen. We kind of rewrote them a little bit. Yoda's no longer in charge. After episode 2, Yoda was really, really disenfranchised with the way things were going. He didn't think that the Jedi should be running a war.
Ah! Great warrior! War is not to make one great!
So he left and put himself into exile on Dagobah.
A conscientious objector, I believe, is the term.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm not going to be a part of this. I'm just going to walk away.
Exactly. And Mace Windu, which we all discussed that Samuel L. Jackson, being Mace Windu, just was underused and underutilized. He's an amazing actor, and they barely scratched the surface on what he can actually do as an actor. And we're going to put him in a much better role this time. He is now the leader of the Jedi Council, and he's more militant. He's more like, this needs Absolutely. To get done. We need to do this. And he uses these Jedi, some of them being very young, Anakin Skywalker being one of them, as his soldiers. And Palpatine puts out on the press conference that, hey, this was wrong. You weren't supposed to be doing this. You sent children off to war. Many of them died. Many of them were maimed. And he's like, you know, hey, and I have a source here that shall remain nameless, who's told me about the way that he was trained, and he was, you know, abused, and he was mistreated, and this is something that cannot stand, and we can't have you part of the council anymore.
And one thing I wanted to ask you about, to clarify with that relationship, in the actual prequels, the way they were filmed, they set up where Anakin was officially like some kind of Jedi ambassador working with the Chancellor Palpatine, and then
in episode three.
And he put him on the council, and it was all very tenuous. Is it official like that in yours, or is it more going to be Anakin and Palpatine are just friends? They just they know each other. He sees him almost like a father figure,
exactly.
But there's no official capacity,
because with that it gives too much credence to, we think Palpatine's evil. Oh, we think Palpatine's evil. No, the Jedi are not going to have time to think about that. There's a massive galactic war going on. They're putting soldiers into places. They're putting all of their chess pieces where they need to be. You really think they're going to have time to wonder, I wonder if the guy who's running the government right now is a bad guy or not? Because the only way that you would know that is if, you were actually the guy writing the script. You know that he's evil because you made him evil. They're not going to have time to think that. Because
there's 200 Jedi, 300, something like that in the area, and they have to be scattered about for the war to a number of different systems.
And that's a bigger point in this one, too, is that the Jedi are beleaguered. They are wiped out, man. They've been running this war before the clone troopers even showed up. And it just makes way more sense when you see that the Jedi are beaten down and tired because they've essentially been fighting a war with militia members, whoever they could find on the planet to fight these robots that are coming in to invade. And now the Jedi see all these clone troopers coming up in episode 2, which if you read the website, you'll see all of this stuff there. that they're like, great, stormtroopers, you guys are trained, you guys are clones,
ready
you guys are
go.
Fantastic, and you follow all of our orders, this is great. They would never even question that in the least bit. The only reason you would question that is because it's part of the story, and that's why these prequels originally sucked in the first place. because you forced people to do things that didn't fit with their characters, like Padme and Anakin falling into love without actually explaining why they would be in love, which just, we covered in the first one.
Because the plot says it has to be, so it is.
Exactly.
And I like the idea of there being, like, a film noir, a Jedi detective, something like that. It's one of those spin-off movies that Disney's planning to do in between the main ones. Like, there is a story that you could do there, but it didn't fit in the second one. No, it didn't need to be there.
It absolutely did not, no. And again, in the story, if you read it, I mean, I cut that completely out. Like, they know exactly what's going on. It's more of a, hey, we've done our research because we have this crack team of guys who can figure it out, and we know it's this guy. So Obi-Wan doesn't have to spend half the movie, like, detectiving all around, you know?
Yeah, it's almost like George Lucas, like, while he's writing the script, was, like, watching Blade Runner. It was like, hey, that's a really good idea. I'll just write that. I'll just do
Harrison Ford and I are cool.
Crappy version of Blade Runner.
Yeah.
Bloody Harrison Ford.
I can't get Rutger Hauer, so I'll just pretend that Boba Fett was Australian the whole time.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so going back to episode three. We see this happen. We see that the Chancellor's really moving parts now. And Palpatine has really got his plan in place, and you see what he's trying to do in getting the Jedi out. And Anakin sees this, and Padme sees this, and she's like, holy crap, what are you going to do, Anakin? And he's like, I don't know, but I got to do something. And she's like, look, whatever decision you make, we need to take some time off. We need to go back home to Naboo. There's amazing things that I have to show you. She's already had the twins at this point. The twins are in the care and custody of her brother, Owen Lars, who lives on Tatooine. Because now you don't have to make it this weird forced relationship. He's actually their uncle. He's actually Luke and Leia's uncle. So now when you go back and you see that Leia was on Naboo, and actually that was another thing that we changed too, and I got this from a guy who does an amazing videos on YouTube. It's Belated Media is his name. If you look on Facebook, the guy does great stuff. He decided that instead of making Naboo a separate planet and having Alderaan get obliterated in episode A New Hope,
I have chosen to test this station's destructive power on your home planet of Alderaan.
Continue with the operation. You may fire when ready.
And it not really making sense because you had no emotional attachment to it. You make Alderaan and Naboo the same planet. So instead of Padme being from Naboo, she's from Alderaan.
Wow. So there's no Naboo at all. Like, all the stuff that happens on quote-unquote Naboo is Alderaan.
It's all Alderaan, yeah. Which
makes
way
more sense.
I
agree.
Exactly. And it makes it emotional attachment to the to the planet now. But Leia's on Alderaan the entire time. She actually grows up on Alderaan. But now, too, another thing that completely bothered me is in Return of the Jedi, Luke says to Leia, do you remember your real mother? And she goes, just a little bit. She died when I was really young. If what we saw in the prequels makes sense, that means that her mother died when she was 3 minutes old and she remembers that.
It's the will of the Force or something like
that. And just some silly garbage.
You know, it's little anatomy and physiology. And I think humans really don't start forming memory, per se, of, like, events at the earliest until, like, 12 to 18 months. Yeah. Somewhere
so
in that range.
Luke Force transcends that, though.
Yeah, I guess.
You make Luke and Leia, like, three.
She must have a lot of midichlorians.
Yeah, that's
space STDs. Yeah.
And the soundbite you did for that was
oh my God.
That was so funny. Anyway, she's on Alderaan. Luke's with, you know, crazy Uncle Owen.
Learn how to be a farmer.
Exactly, yeah. He's on Tatooine. Because then, it's not really a stretch for him to just live with them all the time. I go and visit these guys all the time. I get to stay with them. Little kid logic. Okay, cool.
Yay.
I know that he's my uncle, but that's cool. I like staying here.
He's too young to know or care about any of the events that are going on around them. He's just a little kid.
Exactly, yeah. So she's like, hey, we gotta go to Alderaan. We gotta go home. And he's like, look, I know. He's like, but there's some really serious stuff here I gotta deal with. We flash out. We already talked about how Obi-Wan is off fighting Darth Maul. One of the things that I actually enjoyed the most writing was having Darth Maul and Obi-Wan actually being sympathetic characters to each other.
They're two sides of the same coin, essentially.
Exactly, yeah. And we have Obi-Wan finally defeat him, and he says to him, you know, I'm doing this because you killed my master and you deserve to die for that. And Maul kind of accepting his fate, but Obi-Wan respecting him. And after this, realizing how awful all of this stuff is, going to resign from the Jedi Council. He goes to contact the Jedi Council, but it's essentially like those old movies where you try to make a call and a switchboard operator is like, I'm sorry, but the Jedi Temple is currently busy.
Like, it's the old dial-up signal, like you're trying to call a fax machine or something.
Exactly, yeah. And he just can't get through to him. And the reason why he can't get through to them is because Palpatine and Anakin are actually at the Jedi Temple talking to Mace Windu. And here's where we pick up on the new stuff. Anakin walks in. He sees that Palpatine's already there talking to Mace Windu, and Mace Windu is flipping out.
It's a heated conversation.
Oh, yeah. And personally, the reason I wrote this is because I wanted to see Samuel L. Jackson lose his mind. I love when Samuel L. Jackson is mad.
Who does it?
In a movie. Like, that is the best.
The highlight of many movies.
And just him screaming and yelling at the Chancellor would be fantastic.
Now, you've seen how bad things can get and how quick they can get that way. Well, they can get a whole lot worse. So we're not going to fight anymore. We're going to pull together, and we're going to find a way to get out of here.
And them going back and forth, and Mace Windu is saying that, you know, we deployed these Jedis because you told us to, because we had to fight this war, and Palpatine just very smugly being like, oh, no, well, I never said anything like that, and I never told you to put children into battle, blah, 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 blah.
And, like, oh, is it Ian McDiarmid who played? Yeah. I mean, he can play the reserve. Like, the whole time, like, the good guy's the one that's screaming, and he's just sitting there like, yeah, okay, you know, I'm just cool, this is what's going to happen.
Yeah, and Anakin walks in as the shouting match is happening, and Windu turns and looks at him, and he's like, you, and we all know what word he would be saying right now, because Samuel L. Jackson, it's a word that we don't want to say on the podcast right now. Yeah. But he looks at him, and he accuses Anakin of being the informant, and he says, you know what, you're done, forget the suspension, give me your flipping lightsaber, man, you're out of here, you're done, you were expelled from the Jedi Order. And Palpatine looks at him, and he goes, no, don't turn in your lightsaber, don't worry about it, don't surrender your weapon, I warned you that they were only concerned with your power, and now that I'm taking it away from them, they're becoming angry and violent. You are the balance of the Force, a truly enlightened warrior. And Palpatine looks at Windu at this point, and Windu's like, holy crap, that's word for word the prophecy that we said that Anakin was, the balance of the Force. This dude, or this mofo, knows the prophecy. And he's like, holy crap, he's the Sith Lord that we've been looking for the entire time. He's orchestrated all of this. And it dawns on him in like a second. He just sees it all. And he's like, holy crap, we just fell right into what he was looking for us to do. Man. And that's so much more powerful.
And I love how in the prequels existed, they're all like, yeah, there's a bad guy, but it's like clouding our vision. We don't know what's going on. And it makes him seem like such horrible Jedi, like just dweebs that can't do their own job.
Yeah.
This way it sets up, he just basically gave them so much to do with this war. That it overwhelmed them. They weren't even looking at their own government. And so when he reveals it, it's a little more of a punch. It's a little more powerful.
Yeah. We see Anakin look at him, and he's like, no, I'm not giving you my saber. Lights it up. He's like, why don't you come take it from me? And we get, like, Anakin starts getting a little cockier.
Yeah.
And we get a really good fight here instead of, like,
Palpatine and Mace Windu fighting for 30 seconds.
Which was lame. And you see Anakin and you see Windu really, really going at it. And the Chancellor's just watching and enjoying every single second of it. And Anakin eventually overpowers him with his anger and aggression. And he catches him off guard because after he killed Count Dooku at the beginning, he kept that lightsaber as a trophy. And he's got Windu like on the ropes, he's overpowering him, and then he pulls out the other lightsaber. And Windu never even saw it coming, and he chops him in half.
Oh, man.
And it makes way more sense because if you're going to be that dark guy that we want him to become, Darth Vader, because secretly, let's just say this, we all knew who he was going to become.
Yeah.
But the best part of that movie was watching him actually do it.
And that's the problem with, again, I feel like I keep saying, like, that. Well, that's the problem with the prequels, but I felt like he just decided when Palpatine was like, dude, do you want to be a bad guy? And he's like, yeah, I'll go kill some kids and do some bad guy stuff. That sounds like a good idea. I appreciate this job offer, sir. Like, that's basically all he offered him, bad guy-ness, and he said, okay. This, I mean, from being picked on as a little kid in the academy, and all the stuff that Palpatine set him up, it's like it's been slowly over time, pushing him, and eventually this one moment, to me it's almost mirroring where Palpatine in Return of the Jedi is sitting in his chair, Vader's on one side, Luke's on the other, and he's like, pick up your Jedi weapon, and he's like, Luke's deciding, should I kill the Emperor, should I fight Vader, or should I retain my goodness? You know, it's kind of an internal conflict.
Yeah.
This has set it up for Anakin to do the same thing. He just decides to pick, no, I'm gonna kill Windu. I've had enough of this. It's been so long. I'm gonna be a bad guy.
And we see take that what's too. Mine. And Anakin actually says that too. He says to him, he goes, look, he doesn't feel bad about killing him. He's not like, oh my God, what have I done?
Yeah.
Like in the original one, which is so lame. Like, I get where he's going with it, but then it's like, I've done this horrible thing, and then the Emperor is like, hey, but it was cool. And he was like, yeah, I guess you got a point. Can I be Darth Vader now? Is that cool?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, that was so weak. Yeah. And This time he justifies his actions. He's like, no, you know what? He knew what was going on with me. He knew these other kids were mistreating me and bad-mouthing me and beating me up and taking my lunch money. Like, he never did anything about it, so he deserved to die because of that.
He justifies it in his own head.
Like exactly,
he,
yeah.
It's almost like he did something bad.
Yeah.
And then he's like, no, no, it's okay. It's okay. I did it because of X, Y, yeah. and Z. And that still leaves that room for when Luke redeems him at the end,
exactly.
where he was like, look, I know you messed up, but I know you're still a good guy.
Yeah.
You just made some really bad choices. Let me help you.
Exactly. And Palpatine even asks him, he's like, are you serious? Are you ready to do this next step? Because this is it. There's no turning back. And he gives him the choice. And that's another thing. It was just like, it's now a decision that Anakin makes. It's not a, well, I guess, because I don't want my wife to die, because that's kind of, I don't want her to, dead is bad. Yeah. Like,
and I don't think he realizes that if he would have said no, yeah. that Palpatine would have just, like, lightning him to death. He just
exactly.
chooses, no, this I need exactly, to do this yeah. for my family and for the Empire and everything like that.
Exactly, yeah. And he becomes Darth Vader. He's now the Lord of the Sith. And Palpatine gives him this awesome speech, and he's like, they teased you, speaking of the Jedi, they teased you, they made fun of you, they belittled you, and you took it because you were taught to be weak. Show them how wrong they were, how corrupt the Jedi have become. Show them what happens when you suppress great power and passion. And he just gets to go through and slash his way through the temple, which could have been an awesome scene, but you only got snippets of it. You didn't get any of the real power and like yeah. passion that was there. And we actually see this now. And
I think it'd be cool, like if you think about it, actually, like cinematically,
yeah.
the scenes where he's like slashing people, interspersed with, you know, black and white flashbacks of that kid.
It's like you've read the script that we're talking about here.
Yeah, like, yeah, I mean,
that's,
just,
yeah,
that
that's,
kid pushed him
yeah,
over or something.
He disassociates during this moment when he's killing them, and he flashes back to this kid like kicking him and being like, oh, "Look at the little slave boy!" as he like chops the kid's head off.
Oh my god!
And it's like, and it's you get a real dark sense of who this guy is, and how messed up it was that happened to what happened to him, but at the same time too, how far he's gone. Like, yeah, okay, it's wrong that they did that, but you shouldn't really be doing this. Padme sees all this going on. She sees the Jedi Temple like up in flames, and she's freaking out. She talks to her brother, who also another of her brothers, which again I'm stealing this from Belated Media because it was such a great idea. Bail Organa is her brother. Bail Organa and Owen Lars are both her brothers because, and a great tie-in for this is like most Hollywood families, like we mentioned. Padme is essentially a child actress. They have all these different stepbrothers and step-siblings and stuff like that.
You could very briefly set up, like her parents were nobility, and they have married other people, and it would make sense that Bail's a senator, and then Owen's like, I don't want to have any part of this, and he goes away to Tatooine to have a simple life with the girl that he loves, and it would take 30 seconds to set something up like that very easily.
Yeah, but even better is, you see the Emperor execute Order 66 and Stormtroopers just gun down Jedi. I get it, because the Jedi didn't see it coming and they can't read the minds of clones. That was their excuse. But why do that when you could just have Anakin Scott, or I'm sorry, Darth Vader. You could have Darth Vader go to all these planets and they'd be like, hey, Anakin, what's up, bro? Slice, and now they're dead. That would be so much better because that was what we all wanted.
And that's what it was said in the original trilogy.
Is that Darth Vader
hunted down and murdered the rest of the Jedi. Yeah.
It's reading the rated R version of Star Wars, though. So you
it's going to get, I mean, you can do all of this stuff very subtly and still make it PG-13.
Yeah, I don't know
how. You can see boobs in PG-13 movies now. Like,
I don't know how MPAA like rates sci-fi violence, because I think like with lightsabers and lasers, like it's
not
cauterized,
like,
there's no blood splatter everywhere. It's very
which is unfortunate because I would like to see some of these Jedi
like, just like beheadings with blood flow,
like Kill Bill, like just like arms getting lopped off and just blood squirting everywhere.
Star Wars,
Tarantino Star Wars. Well, there maybe that's what we need to do is have him direct
starring Judd Nelson right from the last one. What a mashup we have of beautiful franchises.
Yeah.
Let's, never get enough Judd Nelson.
Let's close this up, though, real quick, guys. What ends up happening is Obi-Wan is essentially can't find anybody, so he's looking for any Jedi on any planet. He finds one of the planets where a Jedi is like, yeah, hey, I'm here. Obi-Wan, what's up, bro? Let's hang out. Let's talk. He goes there, and guess who's there at the exact same time? Friggin' Darth Vader. And he's like, hey, Jedi buddy, it's nice to see you. Gets, like, towards walking, and then all of a sudden you just see, whoop, lightsaber right through the guy's chest. And Obi-Wan's like, whoa, what? And he sees Anakin behind it. He's like, wait a second, what the heck is going on? If you want to do it on that lava planet, I guess, whatever, Mustafar?
Yeah.
Let's do it there, because then you can set up the whole, like, him falling into the lava.
Yeah, I mean, he's got to get injured enough to be in the Darth Vader suit, so, I mean, that's fine.
Exactly. Now you have these two guys, these two friends, talking about what's going on with them, talking about what happened in the story, talking about what happened with them. and how it kind of forced their hand.
Yeah. And I very much want that fight to mirror the fights from Empire and Jedi, where there's some action. I mean, they're definitely doing it, but it's not anything that is over the top, spectacle, crazy. There's as much dialogue as there is fighting, because then there's the emotional resonance that you've set up in the three movies.
And there needs to be dialogue. There absolutely needs
so
to be.
So much. Yeah.
And you need to have Anakin explain to him. He goes, look, man, I got treated really, really poorly. He's like, this was a decision that was made because the Jedi Council is kind of evil. He's like, and not only that, they're no longer a factor because I killed most of the people who were the Jedi Council. And Obi-Wan saying, look, I agree with you. I was giving my resignation because I don't want to be part of this anymore. But killing everybody's not the solution.
Yeah.
And they really go back and forth with that. And Obi-Wan can't really wrap his head around it. He's like, I don't see how the same kid that I knew can do what you did. And Anakin's like, if you can't see that, you can't see that was what was wrong, and you're not willing to stand up to it and fight, then this is going to be a really short conversation between me and you. And they kind of draw the line in the sand where Anakin is so upset about what had happened to him and the way he was treated, because he was supposed to be the chosen one. He was supposed to be the one that balanced all the force, but then he got abused and beaten and made fun of, and he's built himself up in his head so much, and Palpatine's been adding to that.
That makes sense.
That Obi-Wan can't really overcome that. Obi-Wan can't be like, well, no, dude, you're just a kid. Like, just be a kid. Don't worry about being the savior of the galaxy. And
I think the dissonance between the two, they both agree that the system is flawed.
Yeah.
Obi-Wan thinks it can be fixed.
Yeah.
Anakin is with the Emperor. He's like, no, we need to tear everything down and rebuild it into this structured empire that just, that way this kind of stuff never happens again. Yeah. And Obi-Wan's like, no, we were close.
Yeah.
We made some mistakes. Yeah. As long as we correct those, we can build off of what we have.
And Anakin even says it, and he mentions it in the episode 2, Attack of the Clones. Not in my rewrite, but in the actual one. He talks about how fixing robots is so much easier than dealing with people. He likes order.
Yeah.
He likes control. But he didn't really pontificate on that any further. And you need him to say that. You need him to say, this needs to be ordered. This needs to be control. Because we can't let other people screw this up. Like, just being a total psychopath about it. Being, like, a complete control freak, saying you can't trust people to make their own decisions. Which, if you look at our history here on Earth, not in, you know, a galaxy far, far away, how many people have said the same thing and caused massive amounts of loss of life and atrocities?
Yeah, right.
That's what you're starting to see with Anakin. Yes, he's a good guy, but he just went way too far.
Yeah, and, I mean, he takes the ideals of, like, fascism and communism and says, look, if I free you of the burden of free will and say, like, look, if we do X, Y, and Z, if we set this up this way, then what happened to me as a kid were all these people who were allowed to make their own choice and they chose to torment me and belittle me and make me feel miserable every single day. That's never going to happen again. And we got to make sure that, you know, it's my responsibility to set this up where that doesn't happen to anybody.
Absolutely.
He sees it as structure where it's really oppression.
What we didn't touch on is before Obi-Wan actually got in touch with one of the Jedi, he got in touch with Padme. Because him and Padme have been friends. They were friends since the original liberation of Alderaan, which was Naboo, but now it's Alderaan. And he talked to her, and she told him about everything. She told him about the kids. She told him about how Anakin's really, really torn and twisted. And this is where Obi-Wan makes his mistake, and he mentions that he's talked to Padme. And Anakin flips it just a little bit. You talk to her, how dare you? You went behind my back. You know, I've known that you've wanted to be with her. I've seen the looks that you've given to her. It's not a, oh, she betrayed me. No, you betrayed
me. Yeah, you.
Because it's
one.
Not about Padme anymore. It's about the relationship between the two of them. And Padme is seeing all of this because Obi-Wan is kind of like broadcasting this to her, because she was like talking and he's like, oh my God, Anakin's here. Let me go see if I can stop him. And then she's seeing all of this, and she can't do anything to interact. Now, Steve made the best way ever to have her essentially take herself out with space drugs, is the term he used. She ODs on space drugs.
Yeah. She's, like, depressed. She sees her love of her life and one of her best friends fighting. This whole thing's falling apart.
She sees her husband slash father of her children become a megalomaniac.
As a child, psychopath. Like, actress, like we said, she's not ever made great decisions. She's always been a little grandiose, a little over the top. So she doesn't really know how to take care of it. So kind of like Marilyn Monroe, almost.
Space Xanax does her in, huh?
Exactly,
Xanax,
yeah.
Obi-Wan and Anakin fight, and I mean, it's nothing like the fight in Episode 3, because that was lots of swinging lightsabers around and doing all sorts of fancy things that you would do with, like, a glow stick when you were a kid, tied on a string and you swing around so it makes it, like, look like a circle. They were doing essentially the same thing. I don't want that. I want that, like, intense fight, like, the locking of sabers and, like, gritting teeth at each other and, like, talking S to each other, like...
Like a five-minute fight of all emotion.
Exactly. And he's saying, you know, you were always strong-willed and headstrong, and you never listened to, you know, and Obi-Wan saying to Anakin. And Anakin saying, well, you were always weaker than me, you were jealous of my power, you know, and that's why you couldn't train me properly, because you're not good enough to train me. And they just keep going back and forth. And you still have the fight end the same way, because Anakin is overconfident in his abilities. And he does that, like, cool little flippy thing, and Obi-Wan... You know, disarms him.
We gotta have
disarms him, literally.
Yeah,
the same musical score in the background.
Oh God, yeah, that was so great. And like, as you can hear in the background right now, we've got the I want to say it was
Battle of Heroes.
Battle of Heroes.
Yeah,
this was like the most powerful part of this movie, and this is what essentially saves this movie is that John Williams could write an amazing score for like any movie.
The music and how it looked.
Exactly.
It was very pretty to look at.
Yeah, it was.
It wasn't as fun to watch because of the story and everything. You're sitting there like, please give me something to care about. And it just never really came.
As always, a terrible dialogue.
Absolutely, yeah. So we have this fight. We have that same moment at the end where he's laying there writhing in pain.
I hate you!
I don't even know if we need to say that. I mean, that worked because he was so angry and... He doesn't have any body parts left. But he's like crawling up with his little robot arm.
Yeah, my brother!
And like, I always pictured
now sit there and burn!
I always pictured like him too, like after Obi-Wan leaves, like him saying, like him like trying to pull himself up, and he's like got no legs and no arm, and he's got this robot arm, and he's like, oh man, the love of my life hates me now, and my best friend just chopped off my legs and my arms. It's been a really crappy day, and then all of a sudden he like bursts into flames, and he's like, and now I'm on fire. Like, I could just see it as like being the topper, like the icing on the cake.
Instead of I hate you, it would work better. It would have been, help me! Get me out of here! Obi would have been like,
Actually, you know what?
Obi would have helped him if he asked for help.
Vic makes a really good point, too. Like, if he had just been like, no, because you don't have him help him. He sits there and he says to him, like, he's like, oh God, he's trying to pull himself up, and he's just like, I can't believe you did this to me. And then he catches on fire and he freaks out a little bit. He's like, help, help me, help me. And Obi-Wan just is going to leave and die.
Wow.
And he turns around and he just like saddened, like tears in his face, like walks away, leaving him to die.
Wow.
Because then in New Hope, and he's like, you should not have come back. Because he just essentially left him for dead.
Yeah.
Like, that would be so much more powerful. And then it makes Obi-Wan flawed and fallible,
all of
which
those
he needed
lines,
to be.
You know,
I never understood.
For as a learner, now I'm the master. He really feels like, I'm the powerful one now. You have no chance.
You left me for
dead. I never
understood
when it came to life or death, Anakin not asking for help.
And
rather saying, I hate you, just choosing to die instead of one last. All right, maybe you're right.
Exactly.
Your survival instinct is going to say.
Because now, like, not only is it the fire that made him Darth Vader, it's that fire, you know, the theoretical fire, the actual, like, emotional fire of, you know, he left me to die. And this is the only person left on the face of the galaxy that still thinks I'm worth anything, is this guy who put me in, like, this sausage casing and put a little robot helmet on me. This guy's my friend.
Yeah.
So I'm the only one.
The
that
only
I got
thing
left.
There that's in the not the prequels, but the original trilogy.
Yeah.
Does that make Obi-Wan? Does that turn the audience against Obi-Wan? Like almost he's the bad guy.
I don't know because I think
you're almost too sympathetic to Anakin's plight.
I don't
think
you're
sympathetic. You've seen the background.
I see what you're saying. Yeah, but at the same time too, you establish at the end of this one that Obi-Wan knows that he kind of went in the wrong direction.
Went rogue.
Because all of a sudden you see because Obi-Wan you give a little bit more backstory. You have Obi-Wan sitting there in his plane, and he's just, like, distraught. And he's, like, just, like, bawling his eyes out that this has happened. And then he finds out, news report, you know, because I make television essentially part of this galaxy.
There's some kind of, like, hologram network. They're watching reports on
Stuff. And it shows Senator Padme Amidala found overdosed and dead. He's like, oh, my God. And he realizes that she was watching this whole thing. So he's lost her. So he's distraught now about this too. But he knows about the kids on the planet.
Yeah.
So he talks to Bail Organa. He talks to Lars. He's like, we got to get these kids where they need to be.
And
but then also too, I think Obi-Wan puts himself in Tatooine, in isolation, just happens to pop on the news one day. He sees Emperor Palpatine and this dude standing next to him. He's like, who the hell is that? And it says Darth Vader. He goes, holy crap.
That's Anakin.
Anakin's not dead.
Yeah.
Right.
And,
wow.
Like, and then he makes it his role. He's like, look, I left my friend to die. He didn't die. It is my right to protect these kids from him so that he never does to him what he tried to do to the rest of the galaxy.
You would have seen Obi-Wan's reaction to seeing Darth Vader for the first time as far as like Anakin, what happened to Anakin.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you never saw that.
That would have been a great, just a moment to see like...
And ultimately, I think you said when they were having the conversation, Anakin and Obi-Wan, in their fight...
Yeah,
and you said one line. Anakin said, "Like you were too busy doing your own thing to train me properly and everything."
Yeah, neglect,
so Obi-Wan, while he's on the plane before he sees that after he sees the broadcast of Padme Dead, he's like, he rededicates himself to Luke, and he said, like basically in his mind, he has this: I'm going to go into this 19-year penance in the desert.
Exactly.
I'm going to atone for my sins.
Like
I'm going to make sure Luke doesn't anything bad befalls him the way it happened to Anakin, because it's my fault that this happened.
Because he's now on the path that Yoda is on.
Yes.
The Buddhist monk, almost, like, balance of everything, the yin and the yang, the, you know, the middle path, where this is the bad thing that I did. I now have to atone for what I did to become a decent person. And now you have him and Yoda on the same page. Yoda says, this is awful what's happened, but we can fix it. And saying how we can fix it. And it no longer becomes this, like, very forced, let's cobble this together so these puzzle pieces make sense. You now have it make sense because the story makes sense.
Yeah, this is the logical way that things would have progressed from the things that happened. Whereas in the existing material, like we said, with, like, Anakin becoming Darth Vader, them fighting, it's just like, oh, we got to hurry up and, like, tie all this stuff together. Let's show a shot of the Death Star. And there's just so much... catching up in the last 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Let's give this baby to this guy. We don't have a kid. We'll take the baby girl. There's just all this stuff that just at the very end, let's just make it make sense.
It all makes sense now. And I am so pleased with the way that came out, especially because, Vic, you threw something in there at the end that, like, I didn't even think about. Like, the whole, like, is Obi-Wan now a bad guy? I think that you make the Star Wars world less about good guys and bad guys.
Yeah.
Because now, here's what you can do.
It's up to the viewer's discretion how you see Obi-Wan now.
That's, exactly.
That's another layer to it when you go back and watch the old trilogy.
Exactly, so. But not only that, too, it allows us to fix another problem that was done when they re-released the original three movies. Having Greedo shoot at all, period.
Yeah.
You no longer have to have Han Solo be this clear-cut, I'm very good, I'm the great white cowboy hero kind of thing. Because, like, and I don't mean like that in color, like Caucasian. I mean like...
like white hat, black hat for westerns.
Exactly, yeah. That's what I was going for. Han Solo was white, but still, that doesn't matter. Anyways, he no longer has to be that, like, you know, these are the good guys, these are the bad guys. You can have him murder Greedo, because Greedo was going to kill him if he didn't.
Yeah.
And you don't have to justify it.
The shades of gray should be put into a movie, and... I'm not saying overall with modern movies and everything, how everything's gritty and everything's, like, darker and everything.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be like that.
No.
Yeah. But it's just, I mean, even good guys. Like, we're talking about a galactic war.
Yeah.
You know, not everyone's a good guy in war. And, whether you're doing, you know, the war on behalf of the thing that is right, you're protecting freedom or whatever, you still have to do things that are tough, things that are hard. There are shades of gray with all of it, so why can't that be in the movie?
The Jedi Council was big government, so it's like there's going to be some hiccups there that it's not really explored.
People are going to be corrupt, things are going to be done incorrectly.
Absolutely.
So I think that's a really, really good way to bring them all together.
Yeah, I think we get on Kickstart, raise some money, get this thing going, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I would pay money to see. I mean, I'm biased because I wrote it, but like, I would love to see this movie.
Yeah,
I think this movie would be better than what we saw. I think it would make everything tie together much more cleanly. And just think about the action figures too. I mean,
like, you could have just as much merchandise.
Exactly.
Just want to ask one thing.
Yeah.
I don't know how much this was to talk about, but does your thing have Jar Jar Binks at all?
Absolutely not.
Because I think that's the one biggest improvement. Upon everything,
in
the absence of Jar Jar Binks.
In episode one, you get that same kind of technology where they have that cool like shield thing that they made.
Yeah,
but it's not fish people; it's just regular people. Because this is Alderaan now. This isn't Naboo.
So you don't want any racism in your movies, is what you're telling me. You don't want like black stereotypes like they had with Jar Jar Binks.
Or like that crazy Asian stereotype they did
with
the trade
fish
Federation.
People. Yeah,
exactly. Like
have one scene where Anakin goes crazy. and just kills Jar Jar.
Right there. Get the fan service that everyone wanted there.
I just wouldn't. I wouldn't even cheer, man.
I wouldn't even include him.
I wouldn't even put him on there. Like,
just have him explode. One scene where he explodes.
Just have him explode in the beginning. Like, none of this exists at all. Like, yeah, absolutely. But there you have it. That's how, in three easy steps, you can fix the Star Wars print. Fans love things. We love what we grew up with. We love what we watch, and we can become attached to it. And that's why I spent so much time and effort working on this, because this is the kind of thing that I would want to see. And I think, by proxy, you guys would want to see, too. So let us know what you think. I mean, we've got this great website that we created, you know, greatgeekrefuge.squarespace.com. Go on there. There's going to be a place for you guys to mention, make comments, anything on the podcast. Let us know what you think. Let us know if we're on point, if you guys would be on board with this as well. If not, if you think I'm stupid, let me know. I mean, I love the criticism.
We want to hear your versions, like exactly. The episode 1 and 2 articles. Like, yeah. Read through them. How would you do it? What points would you add? What would you take away? Just fun to have that conversation and see what people would build on. Because, just like Mike said, Vic brought up one very cool little, like, a one-liner where he says, help. And that changed everything the way Mike was looking at the ending. So,
exactly.
You know, absolutely. One person can't think of everything. So it's really fun to hear what other people think about as well.
Yeah. Story by committee. I like it.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, we're going to take a quick break. Actually, this is it. We're going to wrap this up. You get the John Williams music at the end.
Oh, yeah.
Telling us that this is the end of a Star Wars
series. May the Force be with you all.
Yes, indeed. May the Force be with us all. Stay tuned. We got some more great stuff that we're going to be talking about, guys.
Peace.
For everything geek pop culture, this is Comics Online. Woohoo!